You're listening to the Inquisitive Wren Podcast, the show that brings you philosophical ponderings of your life from a bird's eye view. Now, here's your host, Shah.
Welcome to the Inquisitive Wren Podcast. I'm Shah, your host. Thank you so much for joining me today. If it's your first time, I hope that you listen to some of the other episodes and familiarize yourself with the podcast. Again, it's a podcast about philosophy, psychology, but also how people navigate their way through life and, you know, some of their struggles, some of their challenges, some of their ups and downs. I suppose how they've just gotten to where they are now. I'm particularly interested in, of course, mental health, because that's my field. However, you know, this particular section of the podcast, Therapeutic Modalities, talks about how and what may help with certain diagnoses, different bits and pieces that people struggle with, such as anxiety, depression, OCD. It could be anything, name it, and we will try and touch upon it. I aim to get some of the experts on here as well, so some more psychologists, psychiatrists, and also people, of course, in the alternative therapies field, my field, you know, complementary therapy. So I just had an interview with Debbie Cotton, a naturopath. Please have a listen to that. Debbie's fantastic with helping with microbiome. So our mind, body, spirit, soul work together. I'm a firm believer in that. That's the evidence that I've discovered and collated over the past 25 plus years of me being a therapist and working in this field with many different people and on the NHS as well, in different roles as well. Today, I'm going to be looking at something that's become a bit of a hot topic recently, I believe, because I would say 4 or 5 years ago, this was not touched upon very much on the internet. It's always been an issue in mental health. It's always been a part of, you know, the ICD-10. It's a particular topic that has garnered a lot of attention recently, I believe, because certain psychiatrists are now focusing upon it because of their own either struggles or their own experiences or their own experiences within practice. And so I'm talking about the topic of narcissism and narcissists. But what I haven't heard being addressed yet, because I can already sort of predict your thoughts now, oh, not another video on narcissism. However, if you clicked on this, you would have been interested. But what I will touch upon today is something that isn't really touched upon a lot. I'm not quite sure why. It could be many reasons. I don't know. But it will be the topic of narcissism and dual diagnosis, or double diagnosis. You know, many people use different terms, but I would use the term dual diagnosis. A dual diagnosis is something like a mental health issue, a mental health problem, a mental health diagnosis coupled with a substance abuse problem, such as alcoholism or drug abuse. And along with that, you may even have depression, BPD, you know, borderline personality disorder. You could have anxiety disorders. You could even have eating disorders alongside that. So there are other areas of mental health that may affect the substance abuse itself. So it's dual, it's side by side, it's one of the same, both. And which makes it very, very difficult for the person, as you can imagine. But today specifically, I wanted to particularly talk about narcissism and substance abuse. So there'll be examples of where alcoholism or narcotics have been an issue. And I chose that, and I chose narcissism, A, because it's been talked about a lot, but and also I would say there's some misinformation out there as well. I struggled with saying that at first because I thought, well, I don't know if it's misinformation, if that's the person's experience. So we cannot discount people's experiences. But as a mental health professional, my role is to give you what, of course, I've experienced in private practice as well, but also and working in different areas on the NHS and everything, but also from what I know from my training. So it's not necessarily misinformation. I think maybe that's too harsh. I think people, if they're going to talk about it, sometimes, well, they may not be a mental health professional. Perhaps they are what I like to call an expert by experience. And I'm a firm believer in people being experts by experience. If you suffer from something or you're in a situation, then you're the expert on it. And the therapist isn't really. The therapist has their own expertise. And so they may have training in that field, but it's very different from living in it and working in it and working day by day with someone if you're in a relationship with them, for instance. So I won't say, I did say misinformation, but what I mean is it's different information, which could be in addition to the information that is given by professionals as well. So I think I've covered that part. It's a little bit long, my intro. However, it's important that I hope that you understand where I'm coming from with my take on this. Okay, so let's get into it. Narcissism is a mental illness, and narcissistic personality disorder, which is in the ICD-10, F60, I think it is, if you want to look it up. And it is characterized basically by grandiose ideas, grandiose behavior, grandiose personality, overreacting. Everything's big and huge and extravagant. There's different, of course, I'm sure you're aware, if you've looked at a lot of videos on this, there are different levels of narcissism, and so, or categories, I should say, to be more accurate. And so that may not be grandiose for some narcissists. They may fall into another category, such as being covert within their narcissism. But it's mainly, I would say, mainly that very arrogant behavior. Examples would be someone saying that they've got, they scored the highest grade in a university when actually they only passed. And for some people, they didn't even pass. They had to drop out. So that would be grandiose and arrogant, that you're only in the 1%. Who got something. There's lots of other examples as well, but I would say an overwhelming need for admiration as such. All these examples are running through my head. I have to just pick one. So yes, overwhelming need, I think, for admiration, wanting to be admired. This is very, very different, though, from being confident, being sure of your skills, very different. I once had someone ask me, they were going for a job, something new, and they said, they've asked for a cover letter, but I'm afraid to put this or that because I don't want them to think I'm a narcissist, they said. So we had to talk about what that means. Well, there's a lot in that, why they were afraid of being seen as narcissists. But there was also the issue of that's not narcissism. So it's clear, which is what I sort of opened this whole talk about. And it's different. It's very different. And I would say as well, the exhibitionism that can come from narcissism, so grand gestures. You know, I often see people who are proposing on national television as that to a certain extent. Some of it's fear. You may not think it's fear because it's public, but I propose that there is some underlying fear there. Excessive need for attention. criticism comes up here, sensitivity to being criticized. But I don't mean, again, this isn't sort of like, oh, that was harsh. Not that kind of criticism. I'm, you know, like from maybe a sibling or parent. This is maybe you're in bed for 10 days because somebody said something. So this is a bruise, what I would call a bruise to the ego, a hit. You've taken a hit, but a narcissistic hit coming from the narcissist would be to attack back. And we're going to get into that in a moment. And it's not your normal quip that you come back with. It's not the dozens, as they talk about. This will be very serious, very, very harmful, and very hurtful. This will be very different. So we'll talk about that. So now I would say as well, many personality disorders are dual diagnosis. I have found in my experience in working with patients, there is often anxiety or another personality disorder, perhaps, or an anxiety disorder or an eating disorder with narcissism. Certainly there will be, not always, but there would be some anxiety because for the sheer, criteria of narcissism, you would be overly sensitive yourself and you would be overly concerned about what people think. The moniker is, I don't care what you think. I don't care, which is now we're going into another dual diagnosis, which would be antisocialism or, you know, being, or even maybe psychopathology or even sociopath. If you do not care, if you've got no feeling or thoughts about repercussions or what this could cause other people, the harm that it may cause, then that is something else. So again, a dual diagnosis, but perhaps a different mental health issue. So it could, just to be clear, it could be narcissism plus another mental health issue. But in this instance, I'm talking about substance abuse. So I think the topic of substance abuse, I've got to try and take it bit by bit because it is quite extensive. So for the purposes of this video, and I may have to do two parts, because I am very aware as well that there is so much information out there at the moment that I'm going to give some advice towards the end, because I think there is I'm going to use the term danger, for lack of a better one, just for now, of you becoming overwhelmed with the amount of information and trying to take it on board to work someone out or work something out. And I'm not convinced that that's helpful for you if you're in a situation with a narcissist, or if you're considering, and we'll talk about this as well, if you may be a narcissist, because we have to look at all areas here. Now, I want to make it clear here, I'm certainly not taking up for narcissists, you know. I'm very aware of the harm they do. I've even been subjected to it myself. So I'm very aware of how difficult dealing with narcissism can be. However, with any mental health issue, I'm always aware that there is a particular aspect of that health issue that may require treatment. And therefore, it's difficult, but, you know, it's on the same spectrum as someone who does grievous harm to someone as well, because a lot of this emotional harm is leaving a lot of people bereft, unable to function. You know, I've had clients who were unable to function because they've been so badly abused by the narcissist, you know, years later after they've got the courage to leave the narcissist. So let's go into the issue of a very difficult issue of the substance abuse and drugs and alcohol. So If someone is a narcissist and they are in their abuse of the substance, so in other words, they're inebriated, they're drunk, or they're high from drugs, this is when they're most likely to do a lot more damage. So, for example, they're more likely to stalk you on social media or physically. They're more likely to perhaps stalk you by email or by posting something online. It will be, remember, grandiose, big. So it could be something where lots of people see it. That's grandiose and that's big. So social media would fit the biggest criteria. So when you see people posting very personal things about someone online, or pictures, which is against the law, and we'll come to that because I'm going to let you know about the law. I know the law in the UK. That's the only law that I can talk about, but I do know it and I know it well. So I will give you some tips about how you can help yourself and protect yourself because there are good laws out there that will help and there are people who will help. So we'll come to that. There's so much. Yes, the other thing is they're quite likely to seek other people's approval or bandwagon. They want to get other people on the bandwagon. Now, they'll drop them quickly as well, but they're very much in the moment. So they want to get other people on board with them. And social media is one way to do it. So Twitter, Instagram, all these things are blog posts. Somebody even invented a site where they could share documents. So this is all a narcissist who is trying to disturb people or ruin them or embarrass them. So they'll seek, this is very important here. The narcissist will seek to humiliate, destroy, embarrass, and shame you. So remember those four things: humiliate, destroy, embarrass, and shame you. And we're going to talk about all four. Those are the emotions that narcissists tend to feel about themselves. They're very shameful. They would have been humiliated in their lives at some point. So humiliation for them, they wear it like a cloak. So that's what they'll seek to do to other people. Embarrass. So they would have been embarrassed by either their financial situation, their status in life, in society. There's some type of huge, grandiose embarrassment that they feel that they walk around with and they wear it like a cloak. And then also shame. So they will feel shameful about themselves for whatever reason. It could be looks, it could be their parents, their status, again, their lack of education, or whatever it is, they've internalized it. And that's what they feel. So a narcissist will feel all of those four things, and therefore it will feel unbearable to them. And that's where projection comes in. So they will then project it onto other people. So that's the embarrassment. It's unbearable. So when people talk about projection, I don't believe, well, the people I've heard explain it, I don't believe they're explaining it correctly. So the projection part is something that you're trying to get rid of because it's unbearable for you. You cannot bear it. And so you spew it as quickly as you can onto other people. And that's what the narcissist will do. This is where they're at their most vulnerable, especially if they're drunk or high. So really, narcissists, by sheer meaning, will have substance abuse problems simply because narcissists have a lack of impulse control. That's one of their biggest issues besides relationships, but lack of impulse control. By sheer meaning, they will be unable to control one drink, have a hit of some drug. It cannot just be one or trying it. They will have a lack of the impulse control. And so here we are with your binge drinkers, you know, the ones who can maybe keep it straight for a week just to appease the wife or make it appear that they're better now or be able to get up and go to work so nobody clocks it. So they will be able to keep that up for just enough. And then if a business trip comes up or if they have to leave town, that's it. The binge, they will binge the whole time they're there, wherever they are in the world or the town, they will binge. You won't hear from them. You won't, there'll be nothing. People will be ringing. You don't know where they are. You won't hear from them. This, you know, you may be texting to try and find out. This is where they are within their substance abuse, but also within their narcissism. Why should they ring you? Who are you? What's more important to them, unfortunately, is meeting their needs. Now, they will come to you for the narcissistic supply when they're finished, when they're done, when they're ready, not when you want them to. It's important when they do it. So yes, they're off for something for business. Of course, they're going to binge. They will binge drink the whole time there, wherever they are, simply because they're unable to do it at home. There may be repercussions. The spouse may have said, look, you know, this isn't on because you're a monster when you're drunk. And so it's different than somebody who can control their impulses. With drugs the same way. Both are, as we know, physical addictions. So the alcoholism will be doing something to their depression. It may loosen up their inhibitions. But as we know, with alcohol, it's also a depressant. So within the recesses of the narcissist's mind, if they are drinking, the alcoholism is, just imagine a wheel. It's going, yeah, you are no good. You can't even stop this. You have to wait till you're away. You're useless. You're worthless. You might as well have another drink. Might as well keep going. You'll never stop it. Don't care what people think. I need this. I need this. I need this. It's mine. Give me my drink. I'm going to drink. So it doesn't matter. I'll deal with it later. So they'll come with you, to you, with their issue. So what, they were away for a week and they didn't ring you. Big deal. You're back now. Shouldn't they be happy that you're back? That's how they will think. And so you, on the other hand, will be sat at home not knowing what's going on. In your mind, you know. In your mind, you know something's up. You may even think that they're cheating. You may even think that they're with someone else. So we'll come to that as well, because that's another thing with narcissists, to keep you guessing. It's a game. And so they hold the power. And for them, what they fail to see logically is that alcohol or the drugs are the power, not them. They've got no power. In the recesses of their mind, I believe they do know this, but the narcissism keeps them away from accepting it. The only way they will really see it is if another grand gesture is made. It still doesn't mean they'll do something. So people have said to me, well, what if I leave her? Or what if I leave him? Or what if I quit the job? Maybe my boss will then think, oh, should have kept. No, that's not how it works. They won't. What they'll do is the next bit. Well, I'll come to it. I'm jumping ahead here. I would say they're at their most vulnerable at that time because it's uncontrollable for them. And for them, that lack of impulse control will be irritating.
Never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button right now. Thank you for your support. You make this podcast possible. Now, back to the show.
So one more example of this would be, let's say you're in a relationship and let's say they're an alcoholic. They may even binge drink and they've managed to, let's say, kind of control it around you because they know that's what they need to do for things to kind of be okay. They can you know, even have a few glasses of wine and no problem. And they think that you think everything is okay. And you may even be thinking, oh, that's all right then. Good. And let's say they go away for something, business or to see family or to spend some time with a friend. And you don't hear from them for a week. Nothing. No call, no text, nothing. They expect to just walk back in. That's a narcissism. Without any explanation or any care. They may even bring a gift or something for you. No care, no explanation, nothing. You're meant to just be okay and deal with it. It shows a lack of concern and a lack of empathy. So I'm sure a lot of you have heard one of the narcissist's biggest, challenges is a lack of empathy. They don't care. They've got no, you could have had some kind of illness. They would never know about it. Why? Because they were unreachable. They made themselves unreachable. They gave no contact details, nothing. And you may even be years within a marriage and this happens. This could be 5, 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, and they do this to you. And you're meant to just say, okay, this is what they do. Now, some of you may choose to do it. Fine. However, if you make a decision to end things or to separate, watch out. Because this is where the narcissist will begin their next tactic. This is where they will lash out. This is when they begin their hate campaign. Also known as a smear campaign, the narcissist will begin to act within their narcissistic rage, which many of you would have had if you've watched any information on narcissism. You will have heard the term narcissistic rage. And it really is rage. This is when they are uncontrollable. I believe they're making a choice. I believe it could be controlled, but they would need some help and treatment. And, you know, narcissists aren't, well, we'll talk about the therapeutic part later, but they're not really prime for therapeutic intervention at all, because they think they know more than the therapist and no therapist could ever help them. That's what they think. They're actually right about that. Mostly they're right. However, the dual diagnosis, so if there's substance involved and alcoholism, drugs, if there's substance involved, then really that rage is fueled 100 times more. Because if they're an angry drunk, if they're a really nasty drunk, you've got to be aware of violence, the possibility of violence. So for example, taking the gift out that they brought to you and throwing it against the wall. That's narcissistic rage. So you've got to be aware of rage. More frightening is them throwing it at you and hitting you. So that's narcissistic rage. That's domestic violence. Both are, by the way, because it's intimidating and it's threatening. Even if somebody threw an apple at you, that's violence. So let's be clear about that. They may be raging, but if they're fueled by the alcohol and they're a nasty, horrible, angry drunk, then it's triple fold. It's 100-fold, really. The same with drugs. If they're a nasty, awful person on cocaine, for instance, which a lot of people are, by the way, it's a horrific drug. Well, all drugs are real. Well, we could go on about all this. Maybe I'll do a video on that. But cocaine in particular loosens up people, but they do become quite pent up. And if they're on a binge as well, that sets you up for danger. There once was a case, which obviously I've got to change lots of details here, but I will say the narcissist actually put drugs in the person's drink. That's how dangerous this can be. So you've got to be very aware and very careful if that's what you're dealing with in dual diagnosis. Narcissism, where it's all about winning at any cost, at all costs, and a substance abuse. Right, so back to the smear campaign. So the smear campaign, so this is where someone would, again, start to post nasty things about you online. But also, one of the things that they love to do is tell everybody, anybody about you. So the narcissist will make up lots of lies. Now, lying is a narcissistic trait. Most narcissists love to lie. It's mainly because they've got a very distorted view of reality. And so everything's all about them and they're always right. That's a distorted view of reality. They can't be always right. No one is. No one ever has been. And so when a narcissist is raging, when they're in their narcissistic rage and when they're in their smear or hate campaign, same thing, they will tell anyone. You may not even know them. Somebody may walk up to you and say, you know, my brother is this way or my sister is this way. They'll tell you anything just to try and get you on their side. You may never even meet that person, but it's important to the narcissist that they've told everyone they can think of or speak to about you and how horrible you are and what a terrible person you are. It's one of those things that seems unrealistic, but also if you think, you know, I work spiritually as well. So a narcissist will also be, and we'll, you know, maybe I'll have to do another segment on traits, but a lot of narcissists are not religious or spiritual at all, because that would mean there's a power greater than them. That's not going to work for them. They're the most powerful person in the room. That's not going to work for them. So most narcissists don't believe in God or spirituality or higher power or anything. That's one clue to look out for. So they will tell everybody about you. I would also say they're unable to bear the rejection part. That's kind of the whole premise of it all. They will believe or see it as you rejecting them. Even if you go a bit quiet, they will get very nervous because they think that you're rejecting them. And for a narcissist, rejection is unbearable. So a part of it being unbearable is the lying. It's important for them to get everybody else on board. And I would say that it's really to support their own narrative. It's what they make up. And so, yes, you must believe them. You must be on board. They'll even give you examples as close to what could be possible as they can, just so that people who are a bit clueless will start to say, oh, yeah, well, maybe he is like that. Maybe he is. I remember the time he didn't pay for my college tuition. Or something like that, when they've got two parents who could pay. And, you know, I once had a case where the son of the narcissist asked the auntie to pay for their college tuition. When there's two grown parents, one who chose not to work, one who'd worked all his life, so the sister had told the son, go and ask them. Why? Because in the sister's eyes, the narcissist's eyes, the other sister, the nephew's auntie, was going about her normal business, living a decent life, very carefree, but not really carefree, but living their life. Away from the drama, away from the narcissism. So why don't they get jobs and pay for their own son's tuition? Incredible, but that's the narcissism. Why should I pay for anything? Let somebody else pay for them. he's my child, but why should I pay for it? Because of the hate campaign, the narcissist will seek to get everyone far and wide on board with their hate. They will start the hate train, the smear campaign. If it's an ex-spouse or partner, they will try and get the new partner to hate you. This person was this, or this person was that. They will try and ruin you, smear you, talk to all family members to say you were horrible, you were disgusting, you were awful. They will even make up things about you that were absolutely impossible. If anybody had any sense, they would know that it's just not true. But that's doesn't matter to the narcissist. The narcissist doesn't care about that. As long as they can start to plant seeds, that's what they'll believe. It's important to look at the issue of shame here. So because the narcissist feels quite shameful themselves, they will seek to shame you. Now, this could be out of envy. Jealousy is very different. And I'm going to talk about that in a video. I keep saying I'm going to do it. I will do it. But shame. So for instance, let's say you're an attractive person. The narcissistic sibling might be very envious of this and therefore will seek to shame you somehow. And they will usually use a few areas to shame you. Now, it's different for men and women or boys and girls because young children can be subjected to narcissism as well. It's awful, absolutely devastating and horrible. Yes, young children can be very narcissistic too, but that's a whole different video for a different day. Today, we're talking about dual diagnosis of narcissism. So let's say you've got an alcoholic uncle, or let's say you've got a drug addict parent. I'm just trying to get examples here. Okay. So let's take the alcoholic brother, right? So let's say you've got an alcoholic brother who never admits that they're an alcoholic, but they are. You know this. Everybody else knows it. They may be jealous of you because you look good. You could be getting on in life and with life. You could have, in their mind, you could have a good life. And they will be very envious of that, very envious of it. Coupled with alcoholism, when they're drunk, especially, but not necessarily only, it's especially when they're drunk, they will start to spout lies about you. So they'll make up very heinous things. Now, if you're a woman that they're envious of, they will use sex. They will mostly use sexual behavior or sex to shame you. So they may perpetuate that you slept around or that you, that you did something horrible or that you slept with relatives or, I mean, I've heard some horrific, absolutely horrific examples of relatives and siblings actually making up these lies about their own siblings. And so the narcissist will stop at nothing. They will make up, and they will usually, for women, they will usually use something sexual or sex. That's what they'll focus on. Now, this is quite disturbing because it's the issue of, let's say, a male family member making up sexual things about a female family member. And if they're younger, especially, they could be older, but if they're younger as well, of course, this is abuse. However, this also may indicate that that male has some type of sexual attraction to this relative. And that is concerning. And I've seen it happen. And it's unfortunate. But the narcissism will, because they'll make up all the lies, people who aren't without a, if you don't have a trained eye, you won't spot it. But somebody who is trained to look for narcissists, you will spot it straight away. And so usually those women will go no contact. They will eventually have to cut people off, cut people out of their lives, simply because it's uncomfortable. They it's twigged. They know what's going on. I want to also give another example that's come to mind. There was someone, a male, who actually had an attraction to a female relative. And because it wasn't spotted, but the younger female could spot it straight away. They made up a lot of sexual lies about the woman, about the female, very jealous of this woman. And when we looked at the history, that male actually married three people with that female's name. So they actually, just so we're clear here, they actually chose partners with the same name as that female. So it wasn't just that, of course, but that alone was huge. And so, in other words, if they can't actually have that female, they'll go and marry. Now, some of it is envy. So envious people like to emulate. They can't stand you. They're that envious and they want you out. They want you to be extinguished pretty much so that they can take your identity. So whenever people are envious, they usually copy everything you do. That's number one. But again, we'll do something on envy later. But narcissists suffer from envy. Very strong emotion for them. Unable to control it. Again, lack of impulse control. Some people stop at jealousy. Others move on to envy, which I believe is very different. So sex will be used against you. Now, if you are, another example, a gay male. If you are, let's say you've got a relative, it could be male or female, and you are a gay male, they will use, or gay female, they will use sex as something to shame you. Oh, you know, he's gay, he's sleeping all over, he's got AIDS. You know, they will use that. And the information will not be true. And even, let's say, even if it were true, even if you were a gay male living with HIV, what business is it, if you haven't disclosed this information to this envious narcissist, what are they doing? This is disclosure. This is abusive. And they are seeking to shame you for being gay. They're seeking to shame you for having sex and you're gay. She is seeking to shame you for it all. And this is where they don't discriminate. Everybody's free reign. It could even go into religion. They could even start talking about how bad Catholics are or Baptist people are or whatever they are and how shameful they are. So it goes into all areas here. And narcissists don't care as long as if they're narcissistic, you're fair game. Also, if you're highly regarded within the family, this is another hotspot for a narcissist. If you're highly regarded, and especially if the older people within the family respect you and are proud of you, happy for you, the narcissist will hate that. And therefore, they will seek to bring you down. You know, they'll take you down a peg in their eyes. They think they're taking you down a peg. So they'll seek to destroy. Oh, well, you know, he's this way, or, you know, she's this, or, you know, she did that. The lies that they tell, it's extraordinary. So, you know, it would be helpful if some of them were to put a lot of that conjecture and that fantastical thinking into creative work. So a few other things can happen. So you may choose to separate yourself from both the narcissist and those he's gossiping to, because you'll know, especially if it's a family structure, if it's a work structure, you will also know, because birds of a feather kind of thing. So those people do usually stick quite close together and they will be gossiping about you. So within a work situation as well, if you've got a narcissistic boss, they will be seeking to destroy your reputation as well. So you could leave for something better. You could even retire, which is your right. They will seek to talk about you to every relative, if it's family, but also every employee, especially if you were highly regarded. If somebody said something nice about you, they will come right off the back of that and say, well, but she did this, or well, but he did that. And they will make it up. So you may feel forced to go what you've all heard, the phrase, the term, no contact. So let's talk about physical abuse. So the narcissist will, again, have lack of impulse control. So the shouting will start, the physical aggression and abuse will start. Now, sometimes in relationships, partners partner because they're very much alike. So you may be quite physically abusive as well. And that's where you're going to have to check yourself. Although we're focusing on dual diagnosis and the narcissist, narcissists partner with certain people for certain reasons. Now, sometimes I believe the dual diagnosis takes precedence for the partnership as opposed to the narcissism. So to be clear, certain people will be attracted to partner with narcissists and vice versa. Narcissists will look to certain people with whom to partner. However, within everyday life, I believe that's the same. Unconsciously, we all look to certain people to partner based upon what we know, what's familiar, pretty much. And so if you find yourself in a relationship with a narcissist who also has a substance abuse problem, it could be that psychologically somehow you were made up. Those neurotransmitters would have been seeking to connect with the part of the person that's has a substance abuse. That will be the prominent factor for you. There could also be the narcissism, but perhaps the narcissistic parent you had was only a bit narcissistic, because there's levels to it all. Although the narcissist may partner, you see, this is what happens. When I talk about narcissists, I can become confused, because that's what narcissists do. You walk away and you start thinking, well, maybe I did. It's a Jedi mind trick. Was I aggressive? Did I say, maybe I could have said that better. Maybe I shouldn't have said it like that. You start to second guess yourself. So back to the bit at hand, the part I was talking about. You may be attracted to the substance abuse part of the narcissist. However, some people, the neurotransmitters may be clicking into the part that's narcissistic. And so I believe that we partner with people to work out stuff. You know, you want to work things out. You want to work out things for yourself, or you're unaware of all this. The unconscious is going, yeah, you know, look at him. He says, or look at her. She's that. Get with him. Get with her. It will all be early stuff. You'll see it all. So quick example, let's say you meet someone and you're friends. And the first few months you're around them, you're all friends. The first few months you're around them, that person's laid out drunk. Every night you go out, they're drunk. They can't just have a few drinks. They've got to down it down till they get drunk, sloppy drunk. They may have even shown signs of physical aggression, physical anger. They may have tried to pound down your door for some reason. They may have talked bad about you to other people. And it was a thing. It was this thing that happened where all of a sudden your friends may be saying, we heard you said this. We heard you said that. And it was the narcissist who actually told them all that. And they will be trying early on to get people against you, to turn people against you early on. You will be attracted to that. Now, you may look at this now from afar going, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, can't believe that that was all there. So what I like to say to everyone, the beginning is just the ending. And that is pretty much what happens. It's all in the beginning because nothing's changed. No one's changed. The narcissist doesn't change. You can, though, providing you're not a narcissist. But even then it could be help. But yes, you can. So I hope you get what I'm saying there. It will be early on where you will see it. You'll see the aggression, the alcoholism, you'll see it all. Just because you get married or just because you partner and settle down together doesn't mean it's going to stop. So you'll be attracted to that part. Now, you may not be aware that, oh, that person's drunk, but they're also a narcissist. You may not be aware of that. It will be in hindsight. It's usually in hindsight. And this is where I agree with people who are saying there should be help or there should be some type of classification for narcissistic abuse to help people. There is for trauma abuse. You know, there is for physical abuse. There is for all of that. There should be something because it's quite specific. Not if you're a survivor of narcissistic abuse, it's very specific and you do have to look for certain things. It's not the everyday abuse. It's very complicated, very, very succinct, very in-depth. Podcasting can be a minefield when you're first starting out, so it was really important that I find the right partners. The team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Follow the link in the show notes to let Buzzsprout know that I sent you, and you'll get a free Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan. You also support the show. Now, back to the show. Another example would be, let's say they made something for you or they gave you a gift. I've had examples whereby the partner has given the new partner gold jewelry and it didn't look new. And they looked into it, come to find out it was their ex's gold jewelry. So let me get this straight here. So you're not worthy of new jewelry. That's what it comes down to. So the narcissist ticks two boxes there. One, they think in their mind, I'm getting back at them for leaving me, the ex, by giving away the jewelry. I took it off of them and I'm going to give it away. I'm going to give it away to my new partner. And the second box they tick is, nobody's more important than me. I'm not spending my own money on some gold jewelry. I did it once. They left me. No, I'm going to give this new one because they could leave this old jewelry. So they meet their needs. You don't. You get recycled jewelry. You're not worth it. You're not worth it. You're simply not worth it in their eyes. And you must be very, very careful not to internalize that. Again, it will all be in hindsight. But can you see how specific that is? That's not something that you'd be looking for. Only people who are kind of trained, I believe, and maybe you've got some expertise in it because you are in or were in a narcissistic abusive relationship, that you'll be able to spot it. So let's talk about going no contact. So, you know, many people have the idea that, oh, no contact, brilliant, I'm free. It doesn't actually always work that way. It doesn't mean, A, that the narcissist stops. In fact, the narcissist may pump up their abuse. They'll talk more about you. They'll ring everybody. They'll laugh at you. They'll look you up. They'll stalk you. That's what they'll do. No contact. They'll be so angry with you that they'll be so angry that you actually left to make a better life for yourself, that they will still abuse verbally, even mentally. So you may, let's say you go online and you see something about yourself, you must report it. We'll come to that. But that So going no contact doesn't mean the narcissist stops their narcissism. It doesn't work like that. And I'm afraid with narcissistic personality disorder, NPD, there's really no treatment as such. I mean, the closest coming to that is psychotherapy, and there's very few case studies where it's worked or helped. But the narcissist's lies will become more outrageous, more uncontrollable, their behavior. You may find if you've partnered with a narcissist and they're, let's say you're with a narcissist and their ex, they hate their ex, they hate their ex. They've done a huge smear campaign on their ex. First of all, you should be suspicious. If you don't know what's going on, you should be. If you've checked their history and their searches and you see the ex's name, it's, you know, they're obsessive. They're obsessed. And also, the hate about the ex is unhealthy, and it does constitute some type of obsessive compulsive disorder. They're unable to control their urges. And why haven't they moved on? Let's say they've remarried and they're still focused on the ex. What's happened there? The narcissism will not let them. It will not let them. So this is why it's a mental health disorder. And people who choose to listen to someone like a narcissist spew lots of lies and hate towards one person, I would question their character as well. That also includes family. So when we talk about no contact, a lot of people say, "Oh, you know, I can't not talk about my family. Oh, I can't not be in touch with them." Well, you have to ask yourself if every time you're in touch with one of them, notice how you feel when you've hung up the phone or after you've read a text or an email or after you've seen a Facebook post. Notice how you feel after absolutely any sense or mention of them and start to do a scale of 1 to 10. One being, I'm unbothered. I'm unbothered. 10 being nervousness, anxiety. If you're in between that, then you must look at both ends of the scale. What could help you move to a more peaceful place of being unbothered? Because if you still get even a little bit of anxiety, you'll have to ask yourself how helpful that is in your life. And how helpful it is to have someone who causes that, who has the ability to cause it, because you can work on yourself. Again, narcissistic abuse is very different, but you can work on yourself to try to become less bothered. So, looking for signs of narcissism, and I know some of the information I've just kind of flown through because I wanted to talk about something very specific, which is dual diagnosis and personality disorder. So if somebody keeps saying to you, "I'm better, I'm better, I'm better than so and so," when you're 10, when you're 9 or 10, you start to grow out of that. You know, maybe when you're 5, you know, I can run faster than you, and you start to make up names for people and all sorts. But when you start to get 10, 11, you're starting to grow out of that. You're starting to say, "Oh, she was really good. She beat me the other day. She beat me in a race." Verbal abuse. So this is name calling, calling you out of your name, or even saying you're stupid or you don't know anything, or how could you know? You're not educated. Putting you down with insults, the way you look, how you dress, anything about you physically, anything about your mannerism, how you are, your speech, any of that abuse which is rampant on the internet is usually from a narcissist. They are so shameful about themselves that if they see someone come across as quite knowledgeable, articulate, or helpful, and you know, it could be a relative, could be somebody they don't know, that's where the internet comes in, that narcissism will kick in and they will seek to destroy it. look for tone, tonality, so raised voices. I once watched an interview with someone where someone opposed their opinion, and you could clearly see the person's voice getting higher and higher and higher. They had to be right. So this is a part of narcissism. Claiming to have accolades when you don't. So I have given this example in another video. Somebody sent me some information about somebody who is saying that they've got a master's or that they've got all these qualifications and they don't. And so I think we have to look at, there's a problem here. You know, you can, if you want to do a course, you can do it. So why not do the course, do the work, and get it? But that's not consistent with the narcissist makeup. Why should they do the work? And this is where criminality can come in. So stealing, fraud, that kind of thing. Now, this is an interesting one. It's something that I've noticed because I'm a part of the spiritual community. So I will say that I am. However, I'm not really, it may be narcissistic to put myself apart from them because I'm a spiritual person, but we all have different beliefs and different ways in which we work. But what I've noticed is there's a lot of narcissism within the spiritual community. So what I'm talking about specifically is people who find some type of spirituality, what they call in their eyes, and then start to try and tell other people how to live. So these are the so-called gurus, and there are many out there who perpetuate that they are some type of monk or that they've been a monk and they haven't. You know, seers can see what they see. And a seer can see that they haven't done it. And so there are people who out there who are saying that they've done this, they've done that, and they haven't. The proof will be in the pudding. So for instance, if somebody's saying they're a medium, well, get a reading with them. You'll soon see if they're a medium or not. It really is that simple. But you see, the thing about narcissists is you can say you're a guru because you may go to other people's accounts and take their intellectual property and sign your name to it. It sounds good. So why not steal it? Fraud, stealing intellectual property. So they'll steal it and say it's theirs. Why should they do the work? That's the makeup of a narcissist. You're above everything. Above everything, including doing the work, including why should they have some type of spiritual gift? I'd like to have that, so I'm going to make one up. I'm a guru now. I can tell you how to do this, to do that. Follow me. So the spiritual community, unfortunately, and I believe some of it's psychic, you know, it's the psyche that unfortunately contributes to that. And some of it's narcissism. So I would say with the spiritual community, if you see people working with themselves, on themselves, and the real seeker and the real warrior, the one who wants to help people and the wounded healers, do the work quietly. They do it for themselves quietly and for other people quietly. They may advertise like myself. You know, you may advertise to get clients and to let people know that, yes, I can help you. But to become a guru, a self-labeled one, is suspicious, I would say. An over-need to control a situation. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're a narcissist, you know. There is a lot of a sense of control around narcissism. They must be in control of it all. Ah, now there's another one. Somebody deliberately wasting your time. So, you know, somebody turning up late all the time. Okay. So you could say, well, maybe something happened. Yes, of course. There's something for every situation. However, the lack of impulse control will be, I'm always late. I need to be late. And why should I be on time for them? I'm most important. I want to finish watching this program. Sure, I said I'd be there at 7, but, you know, I'm in the middle of this movie. They can wait. Now, I have to say to you, I've heard this from a narcissist. So I'm giving to you what narcissists have actually told me that they do. Another example might be that somebody tries to put you on the spot in front of other people, which is very interesting. So they might ask you something very personal during an interview or in front of other people. So they may try and put you on the spot to make themselves look better or to shame you in a way or to get around something with you. These are characteristics to spot. And again, it's very specific, very minute, though, but certainly a sign of narcissism. Now, this is uncanny, but a lot of narcissists tend to accuse you of something ridiculous. So they'll make something up. For instance, they may say, did you leave that bottle there? Now, it could be 9 hours later. Neither of you know who left the bottle there. But let's say the narcissist left the bottle there. Again, this is a real case that I've heard. So the narcissist left the bottle somewhere. And then they'll say to you, did you leave that there? Now, let's keep in mind, they know they left the bottle there. Did you leave the bottle there? No. But they'll keep accusing you. It's a bit ridiculous. So what's the point? It's a bottle. Move it. Throw it out. Put it in the recycle bin or whatever it is. But if you ask the narcissist why, what's the problem with the bottle? They will start to turn it onto something else. Oh, you always question me. You can't just answer a question. Why are you so complex? Why are you so argumentative? So they will turn it onto you. Another aspect is that you may know, now this applies a lot to work situations. You may notice people speaking very negatively about you. And you may notice that one or two people may focus incessantly and obsessively about you. Now, there could be other mental health issues with that, I have to say. Quite likely around obsessiveness or OCD. But surely narcissism plays a role. And this is the interesting thing. You may be the one accused of being a narcissist. So that's the other thing that narcissists do. They will start to turn it onto you, like the bottle example. It's you who has the problem. It's you. And this brings me into the bullying aspect. So this is huge, the part for bullying. A narcissist could begin to bully you. So they might talk about your weight, how you look, your hair, how you speak, anything. They could talk about what you say, your family, your social status, your money. They could talk about anything. And whatever you tell them, they will twist it to use it against you. Facial expression. So the narcissist will rarely look straight at you. Now, this is something I want to mention about relationships. One thing that's become apparent in my research and in my case studies is that narcissists don't connect with you eye to eye. It's very succinct and very specific, but you've got to be aware of what you pick up from them when you look them dead in the eye. A lot of narcissists are unable to connect with you through their soul. This is what I'll say. And I'm choosing my words because I'm trying not to sound too spiritual on this part, because I want to keep it to the science part, but or whatever part that motivates you. So the amygdala, let's say, in the brain that motivates you to do things to feel good, that they don't want to actually connect with. And I know that sounds odd because you may think, well, they get everything their way. But remember, the narcissist doesn't like themselves very much, and therefore they don't like other people. And pretty much they won't let themselves feel good. So feeling good might be, let's say you're, for example, making love to someone and you look into each other's eyes. Or let's say you're going to kiss someone, you look into each other's eyes. If you're becoming physically intimate, the narcissist won't be able to have that kind of one-to-one eye contact where you have that soul connection and you look at each other with love. They will have a pretty blank stare. It will be very blank and they will struggle with looking at you. Now, they may be able to look at you eye to eye, of course, for normal things. Maybe you're watching a film, maybe you're joking about something. But if it comes to maybe something very physical or that connection, you will find that they struggle with that. And if they can do it, then it will be to control. It will be an element of control. You must do something for them or you must perform in a certain way. There'll be something in it for them. So, of course, we know about narcissists not having a lot of self-awareness. So there'll be no ability to self-regulate or introspection. Again, no soul connection as such. So they're unlikely to believe in spirituality or anything to do with higher power. That's another thing about the substance abuse. So as you all know, most of the self-help programs, especially the peer support programs, are focused on a 12-step in NA, Narcotics Anonymous, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the steps is a higher power. And narcissists won't believe in that. Now, what they may do is go around it. So I have examples, case studies of narcissists who with substance abuse problems who've gone on 12-step programs, who've said, yes, I've accepted there's a higher power. When we dig deeper, the higher power is the alcohol or the drugs. It's not the God or the universe or whatever it is. It's never a concept that's intangible. It's always something else. But if you're trusted as a therapist, if you are able, and I say this with trepidation, sometimes they will tell you that actually, I just said that so I could go to the groups. Now, if it helps them to stop the alcohol, stop the drugs, great, fine. Whatever works for you. But it's unlikely that they would believe in something greater than themselves. So I've already mentioned the issue of stealing intellectual property, copying from people, looks, all sorts of things. A lot of that is rampant on the internet. But the other issue is, I think, denying what's very apparent. So you could say, you know, what you said yesterday was awful. Or you may say, you know, when you shouted at me in front of all those people, I don't know, at Nana's house. You know, that was embarrassing for me. And, you know, if you didn't like what I said or you want to say something to me, maybe tell me in the car or tell me when we get home. The narcissist will not like that, but it's mainly because they can't bear that they did something wrong. Again, they won't like themselves very much. But rather than say, oh, I'm really sorry, or no, I shouldn't have done that. And we'll talk about the ones who do. But rather than to say that, they will say, I never said that. What are you on about? What are you talking about? I never did that. Who? When? What? What? I never said that. You must be on one. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, email us at inquire@theinquisitiverin.com. That's ENQUIRE@theinquisitiverin.com. Be sure to check all social media, especially the Facebook page, for new topics being discussed. And if you can contribute, please let us know so you can be a guest on the show. Now, back to the show. Now, there are narcissists who will say, you know what, you were right. Absolutely, you were right about that. However, it's a bargaining tool. It's a bargaining chip that they will cash in later. It's not free. It's not extra. It's something. It buys them time. It buys them time so that you don't go away to say, you know what, that was it. That's my last straw. Shouting at me in front of Nana. That's it. I've had enough. I'm going to wait, but I'm going to pack a bag. You know, it stops you from making the plan. What I call the plan. A plan that's made silently and nobody knows about it. Sometimes not even the therapist, but nobody knows about it. And the narcissist knows that. So they may say, do you know what? You're right. I don't know why I do it. I don't know why I do it. But they would never say, look, I've got this issue. I'm a narcissist. I've got uncontrollable rage. I've got a lack of impulse control. I can't stop myself. It's usually, you know, I did it. You're right. I should have waited, or I should have waited till we got home. You will pay for that later on. It will come back full force in a different way on a different day, but you'll pay. So thank you so much for making it to the end. What will help? What will help? That's the important bit. So we must consider how you might seek help, because, you know, if you've made it this far, there's a few things happening. One, it may be that you're watching loads and loads of videos trying to work out how to deal with your narcissist, because they're yours. You've chosen them. You must own that. How you might remain in the relationship, how you might leave it. So let's address that first for those who want to change others. So psychotherapy is usually unsuccessful for the narcissist. And it's mainly for the reason that they believe they know it all. And so they may try it. They may go to a few sessions. They may even pop in, pop out. And sometimes I believe, and very few of my colleagues who I mean are therapists, psychotherapists, may even believe that this is the case. But I believe I've got case studies to support this. I believe that some narcissists do go to therapy hoping that they will gain some type of insight. That becomes difficult. They soon notice that what's bigger than them, their higher power pretty much, I'm afraid, is the narcissism. So the therapist will either become the antagonist. They don't know anything. Therapy's crap. The therapist is crap. The referral that whoever referred them was crap. Everything's awful because the narcissist knows it all. So psychotherapy. And also one thing that they can usually do is try and gain all the information, because therapists, you know, we all have this thing where we want to help. That's why we become therapists. So a lot of therapists I have found overload the narcissist with information. They're not really interested. You're not feeding their ego, telling them this is this, this is that, this is what this means, this is what that means. There's a different way to work with them, but what they will do with all that information is use it to their advantage. They'll know not to do this, not to do that. And that's where the, oh, do you know what? Maybe you're right comes in. They will use that as a bargaining chip to buy time. So a lot of narcissists will learn how to become a bit more covert in their narcissism, how to not become so detected in their narcissism, and how to get out of it as such. However, some research does show that symptoms can improve over time. There is some research that supports that the older people get, the less narcissistic they can become. There's still a lot more research that needs to be done. The problem is, it's very difficult to get narcissists into a therapeutic situation whereby you can monitor them. And so that research becomes difficult. There can be some research in prison. But the thing is, by very nature of its diagnosis, the engagement is superficial and you may not get everything that you need. You can get some bits, but I believe that's why it's difficult to formulate some type of treatment, and psychotherapy has been just the one to help the most. What may also help is I personally want to encourage all of you to not get bogged down with the plethora of information that is out there. Yes, it's good that it's being talked about, but what I fear for you is that you will become overwhelmed. I believe that some of you are overwhelmed by the information. There's a lot to take in, a lot to take on board, but the main thing is, you're kind of giving the narcissist what they want. It's all about them. So you're watching hours and hours and hours of videos on narcissism to try and work out them. And you're focused on them. That's what they want. The attention has to be on them. This needs to be a bit more about you. So for those of you who are trying to work on yourself, who want to get better, who want to learn why you attracted this situation into your life, what can you learn from it? How can you better yourself? Where are your wounds that allowed you to go into this relationship? What were the early signs, and how can you work on yourself not to get into a similar situation again, so that you're not fearful of that? Because if you do get the courage to leave, and the narcissist starts this hate campaign, which they will do without fail, this smear campaign about you, it will be one way to make you think, well, maybe you shouldn't have left. And they may even love bomb you, and you may think about going back. So you've got to be aware of you. So I would encourage you, A, not to get too bogged down with all the information. Take in a bit by bit. Maybe schedule yourself one day a week to look at one video about it or read one book. But you have got to monitor your intake and how much you ingest about narcissism, because I'm not quite convinced it's very helpful to take so much in and to keep your focus on them. The focus needs to start to veer more towards you. Also, don't feel pressured to leave the relationship straight away. This could present many problems for both yourself, if you have children, but mainly you, because you've got to take care of you. Now, this doesn't mean you ignore what's going on. However, you could take this time to work on yourself, to strengthen your reserve, to raise your self-esteem, to learn about different ways in which you can help yourself. Again, veto the tension towards you and not towards other people. You may have a tendency to look at other family members then. Try not to start looking at other people. Keep the focus on what's going on for you. Now, in reflection, you may look at other family members because there'll be a reason why you were drawn into a narcissistic relationship. It could be that you had a narcissist. It could be that you had a narcissistic parent or parents or sibling. There'll be a reason for that. There could be severe neglect, or, you know, because if you've got a narcissistic parent, it will be all about them. And so the children will go needy, and especially emotionally, which is one of the reasons why the coldness of the narcissism may be more attractive to you. So focus more on you. Also, consider talking to other people. Now, I know the inclination is to keep the facade that the narcissist has built for themselves. So some people may think they're wonderful, they're fantastic, they're this, they're that. The narcissist to other people will appear perfect, wonderful, fantastic. Oh, she's so lovely. Oh, he's so amazing. Oh, she's so funny. Oh, he's so helpful. Whilst at home, you're suffering silently. So talk to other people. I know that many of you will be frightened of being judged. And okay, sometimes people are judged. Why are they still with them? Just be aware of that. If you're suffering from sleeplessness or anxiety, please seek natural remedies as well as seeing your GP. So things like relaxation, visualization, mindfulness. I've got some CDs. I'll put up my link. Have a look at that. They're free on Spotify if you've got Spotify. So have a look. I think they're free on Spotify. I'm not sure. I shouldn't have said that. But they're on Apple as well. But the sleep one, if I may say so myself, is fantastic. So it's the one that has been most downloaded, I have to say. So the sleep one, the relaxation one, think about that. Now, you may need extra help. So by all means, see your GP and talk about it. And that's the other thing. Talking about your GP, about what you're going through, means it's documented. So if the very dark stuff starts to happen, because I have to say, and we have to keep it real here, some very dark outcomes happen in narcissism. And so we do have to be aware that you must start to document things. So this is the next thing. So just before I move on to that, EFT, you know, CBT, lots of different therapies may help you with any anxiety, nervousness, stress, all of these things, sleeplessness will help. So very sadly, one of the biggest issues that I've seen with narcissism is the narcissist carrying around this rage and this smear campaign years. We're talking 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years and more. The narcissist will carry on this smear and hate campaign against an ex or an ex-colleague or family member. They will carry it on and on and on. They are unable, because it is a mental health condition, they are unable to control themselves. And so because they're so envious, they may start a very public campaign. Now, I just did a recent post on my Facebook about it, because I had been getting emails from people saying that they're being attacked by an ex after 20 plus years. If you find that your personal information is being put online somewhere, let's say somebody's created a website where you can just upload stuff, you can report this A, to Google and ask them to remove it, B, to the site, but again, keep documents, screenshot everything, and C, to the ICO. So I will put the links all in the show notes. This is in the UK. Check in all your countries, wherever you are. But personal information goes against data protection. And so if somebody's posting, let's say the document is public knowledge, let's say it was a marriage certificate or something else that's public that somebody could go and look up, that doesn't mean that a narcissist gets to copy it and repost it. That's not what that's for. And it goes against GDPR or data protection. So you can actually report them. You could also report them to the police, because it does come under bullying and harassment. So it's called the Protection of Harassment Act of 1997, and it protects you from being bullied or harassed by anyone. So this is the law, this is legislature. And so this is why it's important for you to keep emails, any written communication, any voicemails that you get. And also keep it on a hard drive, just so that if your computer, if your information's ever lost on your computer, that you've got it. Keep it on an external drive. Sorry, not hard drive. Keep it on an external drive, so that you've always got it. So that is legislature. Again, I will leave the links there. Make no mistake that there is help out there. In the UK as well, there's also the bullying and harassment helpline. There's quite a few of them, so I will leave the links there. All in all, you are not alone. And the research shows that mostly this comes from narcissists. And it can get very, very dark, really dark, which I won't go into here. I don't think I need to. I think a lot of you know what I mean. If somebody's not well, they may not be in the right mind and they could cause grievous harm. But you don't need to go that far. Posting information or copying it and posting it, even if it is public knowledge, even if somebody could go and look it up, that person has the free will to go and look it up. It's not up to the narcissist to post it. So that's against GDPR. I know because I have looked it up. So I would encourage you to please do it, report them. Now, if you think, well, it could be a couple of people, it's still best to report it. You may not know who it is, but there are ways to find out. Remember, even if somebody has a VPN, there's still ways to find out. So never underestimate the power of help. Last words here. Don't let people treat you any old kind of way. Keep your boundaries. Keep your respect for yourself. Know that you're valuable. Know that you are wanted. Know that you're important. Know that you count and you matter. And know that you can live a stress-free, unbullied, unharassed life. You can put the narcissist in its place and behind you, and you mustn't allow them to try and ruin your life just because they can't bear their own. I hope this video's helped. I hope you've enjoyed it. Give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. I've got an array of different interviews. I've got lots of creative people. I'm going to start doing a lot more interviews on the spiritual aspect. I just did interviews, artists in residence. But let's continue the conversation about narcissism in the comments below. Let me know if you're in a relationship with a narcissist. Let me know if some of the bits that I mentioned that aren't really talked about, some of the nuances of narcissism, and also dual diagnosis. Let me know if you've seen this or you've experienced it in a narcissistic relationship with either a family member or a partner. Are you a narcissist? And if so, tell me a bit more about your rage, your narcissistic rage. What happens? Do you suffer from dual diagnosis? Are you a narcissist? And do you have a substance abuse problem? Let me know in the comments. I would love to hear from you all. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, I do have different topics. So check the Facebook page or the Instagram. This is a very new podcast, as many of you know, but there's quite well, I'm very happy about the downloads on Apple. So please listen, subscribe to Apple, and I hope to see you back real soon. Thank you so much. Bye. Thanks so much for listening today. Make sure you subscribe and follow on all streaming platforms. Leave me a comment and also let me know if there's any particular topics you'd like me to discuss. See you next time.